Good morning, folks. First day of July, and that summer heat is here to remind us that we're in July for certain. This morning, the humidity early this morning had to be at 100%. There's no doubt. I mean, everything was just sweat all over the place. It was absolutely crazy. Try to stay cool. 4th of July weekend. Let's try to stay safe as well as we're making our way around the city on our highways. Always pay attention to where you are and stay alert as well. And please don't drink and drive. Let's be safe. We have a great show lined up for you today. At 12:30, we'll go to open lines. We're going to talk a little bit about the big, beautiful bill. We're watching it on TV. They're going back and forth. Hopefully by this afternoon, maybe we'll have a clearer picture as to where we stand exactly. And at 12 o'clock, Louisiana's Attorney General Liz Murrell joins us. Louisiana has filed several lawsuits accusing the pharmaceutical giant CVS of abusing customer information. I got a number of texts from CVS about the PBM bill, pharmacy benefit manager bill that was introduced in the state legislature, lobbying me to call my legislators to tell them that I'm concerned with what they're doing. Do they have the right to take that information for purposes of your health care to use it for a political purpose? Well, the Attorney General doesn't believe so. And I think she might be right. I think they abuse their right to have that information. I don't remember signing something that gave them unfettered access to me. And we're going to want to hear from you in the 12:30 segment as well about that issue. David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, joins us about these injunctions. He was supposed to join us yesterday, had a conflict, so he's joining us today. We'll talk about this case, Casa versus Trump, which is about birthright citizenship, but it was also one of the other issues was about these nationwide injunctions. The court sent it back saying, you can't do this. You're a baby court. You have to deal with the case or controversy before you. You and your authority does not extend to litigants that are not under the authority and the jurisdiction of your district court. So we'll talk about what this ultimately means. And is this an obnoxious ruling, as some of those in the minority have articulated? The end of democracy here, folks. Again, another existential threat in the long list of Democratic existential threats, right? Wasn't so bad. Now, it's not so bad now. It was horrible when it was the flip, you know, where you had Trump judges doing it to Democrats. Elena Kagan says it was ridiculous. Where do they think they get this authority from? She's done a 180. We'll find out more about that as well. Jacques Williams joins us, Crossing Jordan Christian Fellowship. We'll talk about New Orleans difference makers. We do so every Tuesday at 11 o'clock. I think it's important to set aside this segment to discuss those people that are working in the trenches hard each and every day to make our community a safer place to live, work, and raise our family. Thankfully, the not-for-profit community does incredible work for us, backfilling a number of things that we just simply are not able to do and provide for with government asset and resources. It's been some of the most rewarding interviews that I've been able to participate in, and I thank GNO Inc. for facilitating this with the NOLA Coalition, and we're always very excited to hear from the not-for-profit community. At 10:30, Leonard Raven is going to join us, Artistic Director of the Tulane Summer Lyric Theater. Excuse me. Jeez. They announced their 58th season. And if you've not seen their productions, you really need to get out there to see their productions. They are first class. We'll talk about the lineup this year, although some of it is passed already, but there are two more productions coming your way, and we'll talk about that with Leonard Raven. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on, and I am going to defend Sheriff Hudson this morning on this issue. Having said that, I still believe that she should resign. I believe her resignation would be in the best interest of the city, its constituents, that facility. I think she has lost control of it, is now working feverishly to try and catch up. As a result of 10 escapees from that facility, we have 9 in custody now, still one at large after having spent millions upon millions of dollars by multitude of agencies to try and catch these very dangerous, violent criminals. So I don't let her off the hook for that, and for a whole lot more. But there's one thing that's clear, is that this organization is in financial distress for a whole number of reasons. This organization is in operational distress for a whole number of reasons. It just got worse on both fronts, because one is going to lead to the other, when the city, who typically makes a $10 million quarterly allocation, which are the dollars that the city is responsible for providing for the operations and the upkeep of the jail managed by Sheriff Susan Hudson, put her on notice to say that they were going to have to cut this quarterly city allocation in half, and that the other half may be paid in 45 days. And they're not sure how long this new payment schedule is going to be in existence. It could become permanent, according to the city, because it results from their inability to manage Federal Emergency Management Agency reimbursements for road projects. How many times have you heard me say that it's fine to go out and get all these grants, all these promises from federal organizations, these dollars, but you have to have the ability to receive them? You got to be able to execute. You got to dot the I's, cross the T's. You got to be able to manage the money, or otherwise, if you get behind, you lose control, and there are horrible, terrible things that will happen as a result thereof. And here we are facing that very happenstance. They're going to cut the quarterly payment to the sheriff, and they may cut the payment as well to the district attorney. Two very important agencies that deal with the safety and security of you as citizens of the and homeowners in the city of New Orleans, as renters in the city of New Orleans, and visitors as well. This is a joke. But here it is, folks. We've been saying this forever. How many times did we hear money wasn't an issue? Well, we know why it wasn't an issue. They weren't paying their bills. Vendors, for the longest period of time, were not being paid on time. They actually were the city's working capital. The city was using vendor money and others, their money that they were owed, to be able to make it through a fiscal year on a cash basis. And guess what happened? You know what happened. Here I come to save the day. The council stepped in. And they said, this is no longer manageable. This is no longer acceptable. We're going out to public bid on projects each and every day, and nobody wants to bid on the project. Why? Because they're not getting paid. They're borrowing money from the bank to provide the working capital for them to be able to pay their people on time, pay the insurance bills, pay this, pay that, and everything else. They're looking to get payment from the city, and guess what? They're looking into a hole. There's nothing there. They're not getting paid. They're down and out. Meanwhile, the city's boasting that we don't have a cash problem. We got more cash than we know what to do with. Yeah, you got everybody else's money, not yours. How disingenuous and how dishonest is this? We've never been told the truth, ever, as it relates to the finances of city government. And it's why the city council has had to step in and engage in this patchwork resolution to a number of these issues, because not only you as taxpayers, homeowners, renters, and others in this city haven't been told the truth, the city council doesn't have the truth. It's been nothing but double talk. Now the city has overextended itself, asking for extension after extension after extension with FEMA. They're out money, and now guess what? Exactly what they did to all these other vendors, FEMA's doing to them. And now they're having to tighten their belt, because guess what they're in now? They're in a cash crunch. They don't have the money. So where do they go? Two of the most important agencies in the city of New Orleans. I wonder whether or not this has anything to do with the lifeguards not being able to be paid, because they've never come clean on that story either, have they? Makes you wonder. I wonder how many other people are not being paid in 30, 45, 60 days pursuant to the contracts that they have with the city of New Orleans. Stand by. Yet to be reported. But it will. Because this is the these are the downstream implications of the inefficiency and the inability to manage your money. These are things that CFOs do each and every day in private America. They have tables that they set out looking at cash balances, monitoring POs and invoices that are coming in, timing large purchases because of their access to cash may be greater at certain times of the year than others. These are the things that you do to be able to cash manage your organization through a fiscal year, except in the city of New Orleans. Because adequate funding for Sheriff Hudson is not important, obviously, now. We'll just willy-nilly cut in half your quarterly allotment. We'll just cut the DA's office. We're having trouble hiring people as jailers, maintenance workers, and otherwise in the jail. We're having problem hiring support staff and prosecutors in the district attorney's office. And the city just willy-nilly says, well, we have to cut your allotment because we've overextended ourselves as it relates to FEMA. Oh, by the way, these are dollars as a result of Katrina. And on August the 29th, we will be celebrating the 20th anniversary of Katrina. Does anybody out there believe that the city has the ability to receive? I should hope not. But here we are. And I suggest, and I said it a few minutes ago, I think that this is going to continue to reveal itself. So who else? When does the city come clean? I hope if there's a council meeting this Thursday, I think there is, I'm not certain. But if there is, I hope the council asks somebody with this administration, how many other people have we decided that we're not going to pay? How many others? Do we know? Do we have any idea? How much of a cash crunch are we in? Why did you pick and why would you prioritize the DA and the sheriff as not getting their dollars? Public safety has to be one of the highest priorities that there is in the city. one would think. Right? How did we get there so quickly? Interestingly, and this is a quarterly payment, right? So this is $5 million for the quarter that they're saving. We must really be in a bad cash crunch. Because this isn't like a monthly payment. It's a quarterly payment that's going to be delayed a minimum of 45 days. If I put my old CFO hat on, it just occurs to me, this is significant. This is not a willy-nilly thing. That's why I'm confident it's going to continue to reveal itself. I got to imagine that the monthly expenditure set for the city of New Orleans is a huge number because of the size of their budget. But yet, here we are. No really public explanation about it. A couple of sentences. You know, the mayor's been all over the world on climate. How about on budgeting? That might have been a better area for her to spend her time. Maybe learn how to hold meetings in your office the few times that you're there to pull together your financial team and maybe some training as to what questions to ask and how we go about resolving the nuances of cash flow, tax income, collection of sales taxes, whether or not we should be conducting audits there, what is our collection rate, what are we doing, how many people are in arrears, what are we doing in order to address that situation, or are we just feeling good for everybody and we're letting them get in the rears for year after year after year, and it's no big problem, we'll just cut the allocation to the sheriff in half quarterly. Because now Big Brother, the federal government, is giving us a taste of our own medicine. And we had to run around, start jobs, ask for extension after extension after extension after extension from the federal government because we were not able and we did not have the infrastructure to start these jobs, complete these jobs, get them through the process, properly funded, set aside the cash to do so, which is what we did in our organization. We had a plan, a capital plan for all of that. Sat down with the CFO. I was the sheriff at the time, an individual who knew what they were doing, obviously. Made the recommendations, came to a resolution. This is the way we're going to do it. Yeah, it would have been nice to give a pay raise this year, but we didn't have the capital in order to do so, so that we're going to have to forego that because we got to get through this cash crunch because of all of the property damages and everything else that we had experienced during the course and time of Katrina. And we knew that we had to tighten our belt and make some sacrifices. I doubt very seriously they had these conversations. They couldn't have had these conversations because they wouldn't be doing this. They knew that this day of reckoning was coming. If they didn't know, then we're in bigger trouble than we ever imagined. We got into this situation, obviously, and now we're this critique of this. It could only be because the mayor is a female and she's black. It's what she's trying to convince everybody of. Over and over and over again. This is as a result of the Jim Crow South, I'm sure. I'm certain that these are the things that FEMA has taken under consideration after granting every extension, an extension, an extension for like 15, 16 years. Maybe longer. It has to be. It's the only reason it could be. There can't be any other reason. This is the crap that someone who thinks that they're a leader is trying to get us to buy. And again, less than 200 days now and counting. This is going to be almost every week between now and then, where we're going to find out that things are coming home to roost and we have a significant problem. We better think long and hard about who our next leader is going to be. Who is going to be the individual that's going to be able to stand up and make sure that we're dotting the I's, crossing the T's, making the tough decisions, showing up at work every day, putting in the hours necessary, and doesn't have a desire to travel the world on the public dole to learn little about nothing? We can't even deal with repairs as a result of Katrina, and we really believe that the mayor is going to go off to these conferences and come back and implement things that she's learned at these conferences? Give me a break. Does anybody believe that? We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. Give us a call on the Oakwood and Hart Jewelers Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870. And joining us now is Leonard Raybon, Artistic Director of the Tulane Summer Lyric Theater. Leonard, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So, Leonard, congratulations. You are, in fact, now the Artistic Director for the company. Congratulations on that designation, and we're very excited about this season.
Thank you. I am, too. I appreciate you saying so.
So, just for the benefit of the listening audience, I just want to say a couple of words, Leonard, before we start the interview. This city has so much to offer, and it's these little jewels like the Tulane Summer Lyric Theater. I've been many different summers. Unfortunately, this summer, I don't know why this has slipped by us, but we haven't purchased tickets yet. We will. Because it is totally enjoyable, it is totally affordable, and the quality of the productions are second to none, and they're just a lot of damn fun. And I'll just leave it at that, Leonard, and I'll let you tell us about what we have coming up. We already missed one, A Chorus Line. I'm sure that went beautifully, but we have two more productions over the summer.
Yes, A Chorus Line actually did go very, very well. Our next show is next week, opening on July 10th, and that's Company. That's the famous Stephen Sondheim show directed by Leslie Castet. We have an all-star cast. And then at the end of July, overlapping the beginning of August, we have the sweeping Rodgers and Hammerstein Carousel.
And, you know, what most people don't realize is the breadth and depth of the local talent that we have. A lot of young kids in high school and in college that are involved in these performances, as well as professional, you know, folks that are professionals. And that's what I love about the mix of what y'all bring to the stage.
Thank you. You know, since the pandemic, we, as well as many other theaters, have faced some financial hardships. And one thing that we've done to mitigate that is that we limited, at least in the last couple of seasons, limited all of our cast to local talent. So, and days and years past, we would hire people from New York or other places around the country. And listen, we have so much talent here. The quality has continued to be wonderful with our local people, and we are just so, so proud to showcase them.
I never forget a few summers back, and I can't even remember what play we were watching. We're sitting there on the stage, and my wife and I are looking. And I said, wait a minute, that was a classmate of my son's in high school. Wait, there's another classmate of my son. There's a classmate of my daughter in high school on the stage. It was one of those moments. What the heck is going on here? I didn't know that that this is what these young kids did. They never talked about it.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, there's so much talent in New Orleans. You know, a lot of them don't, probably most of them don't do theater as a full-time job. So they might have a job as a desk clerk or a lawyer or a doctor, and then they'll show up as a, you know, a major character on our stage. It's wonderful.
Absolutely. Ticket sales, if people have an interest in purchasing tickets, where do they go in order to do so?
They can call 865-5269. They can also go to
Leonard,
Summer Lyric. Yeah.
Leonard, say that again. I think we lost you for a second, but say the number again.
Oh, sorry. The number is 504-865-5269.
Okay.
And there's a website. And then if they want to, yeah, the website, I'm trying to, I always forget the actual URL, but a quick Summer Lyric Theater Google search will take, yeah, it's the first, if you Google Summer Lyric Theater, it's the first thing that comes up. You click on that, and then there's a button now that you can buy all of your tickets and subscriptions online.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is how many years now? For the
this is the 58th season.
Wow.
58.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yes, it started in 68. Yeah, it's, and I'm so fortunate to have known all of the previous artistic directors. Frank Monachino, visionary. He founded the organization. I never worked with him directly, but I knew him, and we overlapped a bit. Then, of course, Michael Howard. After him, for a good couple of wonderful decades. Then Michael McKelvey, and then me. So I'm very fortunate to be acquainted with the history going back that far.
Both of these productions will have full orchestra.
That's right. We always do. That's one of the things that a few years ago, a wonderful chairman of our steering committee, Barbara Workman, began an endowment for the purpose of perpetuating the ability to keep full orchestras in the pit. And so that's a really big sort of mission point of ours.
It's one of the things that I love the most about the productions. I mean, because Dixon Hall, as you well know, it's very quaint. It's unique in its presentation. And I guess has the Summer Lyric Theater been there the entire time in that hall?
Yes, as far as I know, going back to 1968, it was always there in Dixon Hall.
Yeah, and it's really a great venue. It's old, but it's nostalgic and just a great venue, right?
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, I think people love being there. It's a pretty theater, beautiful sort of carvings on the proscenium around the stage area, and it's a lovely place to be, I think.
Now, there's also the ability for the future, just to get people thinking about this, they can buy season tickets to the Summer Lyric Theater series as well. Is that correct?
They absolutely can. And that button that you find on the website, you can do that there. You can also call the number, and James Velasquez, who runs our box office, will be happy to give you all the information that you need.
Now, folks, we got to make sure that they sell out every night that they have available, because this is how we keep this going, and this is how we're able to enjoy. We want to be able to say one day that we're having the 70th anniversary of Tulane Summer Lyric Theater. We need to support this. This is one of those unique nuances, that there are these offerings. It's kind of like Le Petit Theater in the French Quarter. We wouldn't want to lose that either, right? These are all these little jewels that we have in the arts that's so important to our city.
Yeah, and you know, our first and last show, A Chorus Line and Carousel, those are really well-known names of Broadway shows. Company might not be such a well-known name of a show for our community here in New Orleans, but you really don't want to miss it. It's an ensemble cast. The best actors in town are in it, and there's just really, really great moments in it. You don't want to miss it.
And interestingly, the directors and the choreographers of all three productions this year are all women, right?
That's right. And the first and last show, the director is also the choreographer. So A Chorus Line was Jean-Yves Buisson. And then the last show, Diane Lala, who's wonderful, who's directed a show for us every year for many, many years. And in the middle show, the one we're doing now is Leslie Caste, Broadway veteran and local. And then our choreographer is Caitlin Zilon. So, yes, it's that part of the creative team are females all across the board.
So Company is one you definitely want to see because it's something new. It's something that you can expose yourself to that maybe a lot of people don't know about, right?
It is, and it's a very universal story. I mean, the guy's turning 35. All of his friend groups are coupled, married, and all the rest of it. And then he's just kind of like, well, where do I go from here? Do I let somebody in? It's like the song Desperado. You better let somebody love you before it's too late. And you know, there's a lot of things. And everybody's saying, Bobby,
and then,
come on.
And then
Bobby,
there are those, that say, stay single.
Well, you know what? Those people also will resonate with this show. So it's something for everybody.
Absolutely. Leonard, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck in the final two productions. Company is July 10th through the 13th.
Yes.
So that'll be four performances. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And Carousel is July 31st through August the 3rd. And you can call 504-865-5269. For tickets, and I did find a website. It's liberalarts.tulane.edu/summerlyric. You can get a tick, go there for more information. You can also go to just Google Summer Lyric Theater, and it'll get you to where you need to be to purchase tickets as well. Congratulations to Leonard Raybon, Artistic Director, just recently named that for the Tulane Summer Lyric Theory. Congratulations on that designation, and best of luck
for the
remainder of this summer.
Thanks, and thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you, Leonard. We truly appreciate all that you do. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-187 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. So, folks, we will visit with Liz Murrell, Louisiana's Attorney General. The state of Louisiana has filed several lawsuits accusing the pharmaceutical giant CVS of abusing customer information and using its dominant market position to drive up drug costs and unfairly undermine independent pharmacies. This is all about pharmacy benefit managers. We'll talk about that with Liz Murrell as to where that is going. It's of significant interest to a lot of people. There's a mindset out there that the PBMs and the control that they have over the flow of drugs, the deals that they actually construct with pharmaceutical manufacturers and otherwise, don't always benefit the consumer, you and I and others. So this is going to be a very interesting lawsuit as to where this goes. People really don't want to, some folks don't, obviously in the industry, don't want to shine a light on PBMs, how they operate, what do they mean. You know, a lot of times we have situations where we're able to get our pharmaceuticals a lot cheaper somewhere else, like in Canada. We hear stories about that all the time. For about 25% of the cost of what it would be here in the United States. The legitimate question is why? How can that be? Canada, a much smaller market than the United States, doesn't have the pharmaceutical infrastructure that we have in the United States, doesn't have a lot of the regulatory stuff that we do to make sure about the safety and everything and the efficacy of these drugs as they hit the market. Does that mean that we're having to fund and finance that totally on ourselves and that no one else has to share in these costs? We do all the testing. We foot the entire bill of the regulatory side of the pharmacy industry, and everybody else in the world reaps the benefit of it. Is that fair to us? Should there not be another way to cost share the financing of this to make sure that the public, not only in this country but in other places, is protected? is safe and secure and confident that the drugs that they're taking are not going to be a problem? It's a very complex issue. All of these things come together in this pricing scheme, and that's what it is, a scheme where we actually, I think the PBMs and others pick the winners and the losers. And it's obvious when you compare the pricing that we have to other countries, we are the loser. We're funding and financing a lot of this. And I don't know about you, but I think the public's had enough. I mean, I think, you know, when you look at your commercial insurance, the numbers are going up all the time. It's the pharmacy benefit plan that's going up all the time. Medical inflation, a good part of that number of overall medical inflation is influenced by the cost of drugs. So it's something that we should be able to get our hands around. The problem is nobody wants to share the information. We have formularies that change every month. Your drug is on the formulary with your insurance carrier this month. It's not on there next month. They want to shift you to another medicine. You've already tried that medicine. The side effects are intolerable for you. So that's why you're on the previous medicine. And they, you know, you're going back and forth with these folks trying to make them understand, I've already been down that path. I can't tolerate that medicine. That's why I'm over here. And then every 6 months when they re-up these contracts, you have to go through this same scenario every single time. Nothing's changed, folks. Why do you can't 6 months later try to shift me back to the same medicine that I told you I cannot tolerate? You hear these stories over and over and over again. It just wears people down. It shouldn't be that difficult. And they want to move you there because they need to get the numbers in order to support the alleged significant discounts that they're getting for these particular drugs. Now, I don't know that these discounts, that you reap the benefit of these discounts. In fact, I am completely skeptical of that actually happening. But what I do know is that they pick and choose the winners. And it doesn't matter to them what medicines you can tolerate and what other ones you can't. I can't explain why that is, but it is. We've all experienced it, right? So kudos to Liz Murrell, the Attorney General. It's going to be interesting to see where this is going to play itself out. The independents are getting, you know, pretty much blown apart here in almost every market, because major insurance carriers are steering you to these pharmacies that are understaffed intentionally. They're having a very difficult time keeping up. They're getting the lion's share of the business. And guess what we don't get as consumers? Service. That doesn't mean that the people at work there are not good people. They're phenomenal people. But they're being asked to do the impossible with so little. Interesting, you go to the independent pharmacy, you get much better service. It's amazing. First name basis. They know who you are. You know, you're not having to go and jumping through all these hoops and this and that and everything else. The pharmacist comes down and visits with you and tells you this, that, or otherwise. Kind of nice. Kind of the Marcus Welby MD approach. I don't know about you, but I think stepping back, you know, and maybe we've had too much progress, I'd rather go in the other direction. Because it seemed a lot easier to me. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Pastor Jacques Williams, Crossing Jordan Christian Fellowship, and we'll talk about what they are providing in our community. And David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, will talk about the Supreme Court curbing nationwide injunctions. We'll be right back. Stay with us.